Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Wild and Unprotected. I'm your host, Ethan Lehman, and I'm here with my co-host, Koji Sabalde.
Hey everybody.
This will be a fun one today. Let's roll that intro.
Just toss them overboard when you're sitting having lunch, or you know, just anything like that.
The classic.
We actually were joking about setting up an OnlyFins account.
Here's to us all swimming through the shit and making more sense of it.
Wild and unprotected, planet Earth we can't neglect it. Nature sexy, we need these places, so please respect it.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. In today's episode, we have Encar Garcia from the Jaguar Rescue Center. Hey, Encar.
Hi, hello. Very nice to meet you guys. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. You have quite the organization.
Yes. Well, we have a big rescue center, a big home. I always say that, of course, this is my home. So I have a rescue center in my home, or a home in a rescue center. I don't know how is the best way to describe that that crazy house that we created, full of animals and full of people, full of tourists. I mean, yeah, it's very beautiful, but kind of complicated to run all these rescue center.
Oh, I'm sure. I bet. So for the audience out there, can you tell us about home? Like, where is the Jaguar Rescue Center?
The Jaguar Rescue Center is located in the Caribbean south of Costa Rica. It's between Panama and Nicaragua, so we are very close to Panama. Actually, we are just an hour far away from there. It's located, for me, in one of the most beautiful places around the world, probably. Is facing the ocean just in front, you know, the Caribbean, and we have the jungle and the mountains at the back, and the rescue center is just there, you know, in the middle. We have Puerto Viejo town very close, around 3 kilometers, that is more popular and is kind of now more touristic, and yeah, we have a big facility, you know, that started step by step in the last 15 years. But now we have a hospital and we have the rehab place and the sanctuary. I mean that, yes, it's kind of a big, big home, big place.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah, Costa Rica is absolutely such a diverse place on the planet. So you can meet someone that's from Costa Rica and they tell you where they're from and you visit there and it's completely different than where you've experienced Costa Rica before. So I definitely can see how where you're from is probably very diverse, especially if you have that many animals at your rescue center.
Yeah, actually, I'm from Barcelona. I'm Spanish, and I end up in Costa Rica like more than 15 years ago. And I'm a biologist. I was studying, you know, my career and everything, and I wanted to study the howler monkeys. So I came to Costa Rica in 2001, my first time, and I fall in love with that country, with the monkeys, and because I met another special monkey that he was my husband for 16 years, you know. Well, he passed, unfortunately, but we create this rescue center together, and
did you say, howler monkeys?
Howler monkeys, yeah. I came to study the howler monkeys. Oh my God, this is a good concept. Yeah, it's one of the loudest monkey on earth. Well, because the gibbon and the howler monkeys both are very loud, but it's one of the loudest mammal on earth. It's amazing every morning to wake up with the sound of this monkey, you know. It looks like a gorilla or it looks like huge, but actually it's not very large monkey, but with a very, very powerful voice.
Yeah, I could imagine it's really fun in the house with all that noise going on.
Yes. Well, sometimes he's like, oh my God, what I choose, why I had to choose this life, you know, because at 4:30 in the morning, 5 in the morning, the monkeys are super loud. Actually, they look like are inside your room because they are in the trees just outside the house. And then I have my own monkeys. I mean, own monkeys, the monkeys that are in our sanctuary or in our rescue center, that of course they join the party of the monkeys that are wild, and everybody start to be very loud, you know, this soon in the morning. And then we have the parrots and the macaws, so it's like a kind of a big party at 4:30 every morning.
That's a good wake-up call right there. I have 6 chickens, and I have similar alarm clock in the morning, probably not as diverse. Yeah. But they're definitely up at sunrise waking us up for food, so I feel your pain. But that's awesome. Let's backtrack a little bit. Yeah. And Carr, let's talk about what made you come to Costa Rica to start your career with biology, and, you know, tell the audience a little bit about the early stages of your career before the Jaguar Rescue Center.
Well, I think since I can remember, I wanted to dedicate my life to nature, and especially to wildlife. And then, you know, I started reading when I was 12 years old, Jane Goodall, Diane Fossey, that they are still my heroines. And I wanted to work with monkeys, with apes. And I studied biology. Then I started studying some studies about primatology. And then what I say is like, well, I end up working in Barcelona Zoo. The Barcelona Zoo, it has one of the most important collections, you know, of apes and monkeys, because we are very close to Africa, and a lot of monkeys that they were, they are actually in the zoo. They still coming from 20 or 50 years ago from Africa, or the people that there are kind of a traffic is still there, you know. So, well, I was studying biology, and I was asking myself, where can I learn more about primates? And finally, I worked almost 7 years in Barcelona Zoo raising baby gorillas. I raised like 10 baby gorillas, chimpanzees, a lot of cercopithecidus, a lot of other kinds of monkeys. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot, you know, that how to manage, how to handle, you know, monkeys, the diets, and how complicated are they, and how amazing are they, you know, how very close to humans are they. But while I was working in Barcelona Zoo, even if the people is very nice, we all were, you know, trying to do our best for these animals, that they will have to spend the rest of their life in a kind of in a jail, no, like in an enclosure. And I was thinking like, oh my God, it should be another way. This is not what you want to do. You had dreams, you know, like being in the jungle and help directly to conservation. So I always say that in Barcelona Zoo, I learned a lot, but I learned a lot what I don't have to do. And this is you know, it was teaching me like that it must be another way to treat primates and animals. And well, I came to Costa Rica in 2001, and I fall in love. I fall in love with the howler monkeys, with all the monkeys in general. We have 4 types of monkeys in Costa Rica. 3 of them are living at the Caribbean, okay? Capuchin monkeys, howler monkeys, and the spider monkeys. They are the largest ones. So I came here to study the monkeys, and I fell in love with another monkey that it was from Italy, and it was a very handsome man, and he was an herpetologist. And it was like a Tarzan, you know, rescuing that poisonous snakes and crocodiles. And of course, I completely fell in love with him. the first time that I saw him, he was riding a black horse that he was calling Mario. Both now are in a paradise. My husband, he passed 7 years ago. But I think we were an amazing match, able to create this fantastic play that today is calling Jawa Rescue Center. So I think Jawa Rescue Center a star because of love.
And that's an amazing foundation.
It is. Now it's an amazing foundation, very big, full of people, animals, volunteers from all over the world that really wants to make a difference, you know, people that we still have hope for changing things and to help animals directly. That is what we do. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's beautiful.
Having something that's built out of love, I think, is something that can make the most impact. And it clearly has started to for you guys. So let's talk a little bit about the Jaguar Rescue Center. I think first question, we've talked a lot about monkeys. So let's talk about the name. How did you guys come up with the name for Jaguar Rescue Center?
Oh, yeah, that was crazy. Well, the name is, yeah, I know that sometimes it's very confusing, you know, that people is like, oh, guys, you have jaguars, and say, nope, we don't have jaguars. We never had a jaguar here, actually. And yeah, it is because, you know, like in 2000, probably it was 2007 or so before, people from town call us and say, oh, Sandro, Enkar, we have a baby jaguar that is being poisonous or something happened with him. We don't know, blah, blah, blah. So we went there. We rescued this jaguar, supposedly jaguar, you know, and it was an ocelot. Here, even if sometimes you think that when you go like in a jungle, in the country, the people is going to be very, how you say in English, that they're going to know a lot about nature, you know, about the animals and about the biology. And well, it's not like that. They confuse a lot. They didn't know, you know, how many big cats there are in Costa Rica, that actually we have 6 big cats in Costa Rica. But if they see an animal, a big cat with the spots, they call jaguar. You know, for them, everything was a jaguar. So now it's different, you know, almost 20 years later, things are changing and whatever. But so they start calling us the people from the jaguar, the people that rescued the jaguar, the people from the jaguar. So, you know, when you have a nickname, it's very complicated to change it. So years later, when we had to decide the name for our center, you know, for our rescue center, we were thinking a lot in a different name, you know, Caribbean Rescue Center, Howler Monkey Rescue, whatever. But everybody just call us Jaguar Rescue Center. You know, it was impossible to change it.
Yeah. I love it. And there's also a jaguar in the logo.
Yes, of course. now all our logos and our is like that we are the Jaguar people. Actually, we work with the conflict between people and big cats or Jaguars. You know, we work in the communities dealing with this problem and trying to fix the chicken houses, the chicken cubs and everything. But we never had a Jaguar at the Jaguar Rescue Center.
Which I think it's so funny because you are so right. Nicknames, once they stick, they never, ever go away, regardless of what it is, especially in a local community that just knows you as that. So that's kind of funny. And I think that's a really good explanation because you guys do so much. I mean, if someone were to look at your social media, I mean, there are turtles, there are monkeys, there's, you know, so many different animals, and it's just absolutely amazing. So that's kind of funny. And when you were talking about, you know, locals essentially associating a big cat with spots to just being a jaguar, it reminded me of my grandmother. Anytime she would talk about a video game system, no matter what it was always a Nintendo. everything. It could have been an Xbox or a PlayStation or whatever it is. Everything was a Nintendo. So that's kind of funny to be able to relate the two. But it's truly amazing what you guys are doing with all of these animals, and you know, sticking to the nickname in your local community is what the local community knows you guys as. That's amazing. Let's talk about the early history of JRC and what you guys went through kind of in those early years building the organization.
Well, it was, you know, when you have a dream, I always say that you have to be careful about whether you're dreaming of, because it finally came through. So Sandra and I, we spent like just our holidays here in Costa Rica, no? Because I was working in Barcelona Zoo, he was working with the snakes in Europe and everything. So we came here and everybody started knowing about our professions in Europe, that we were like the gringos, you know, taking care of wildlife. And I always say, we are not gringos, we are Europeans. But it's okay. Here, you are always gringo. So we were like, you know, the crazy gringos taking care of poisonous snakes, imagine, and taking care of howler monkeys and sloths that they can bite you. They are poisonous, they are venomous, they can transmit you a lot of diseases, and all the animals were like horrible, you know, that everybody started calling us when they had a snake in the house and the sloth hanging on the porch or a monkey with a injured arm, leg, whatever. So finally we had this house, the house that I'm right now here, you know, and a little garden. So step by step, we have having more animals and more animals. And one day I saw my husband and I say, honey, I think we have a rescue center, because we have 6 sloths in the bathroom, 2 wildcats in our porch going around with, we didn't have any cage. We have horses. We have the wildcats. We have the sloths in the bathroom. We have an olingo sleeping with us in a bed. And we have an anteater, a little anteater, in a carry box in the kitchen. So it was crazy. We had no life. We were like, you know, just with the animals. And the government started bringing us animals, because even they didn't know how to deal with all these animals that they confiscated, or they have. It was nothing. It was no one taking care of the animals. And we are still the only one in all the Caribbean, in all the Atlantic coast. Okay, there are just another rescue center, but they take care of just sloths. They take care of sloths, but not other animals. Here we have owls, birds, different kinds of thousands of birds and iguanas and reptiles and marine birds and everything that is wild, you know. So it's the rescue center start like this. I mean, and I say, okay, my dream came true. I have a rescue center. And then we decided to start building, you know, and buying lands around us step by step. And that was possible because we didn't have money when we arrived here, you know, to create a rescue center from zero. Because sometimes people is like, okay, I have this land, I'm going to buy this land, I'm going to do a master plan, and I'm going to create a rescue center. This was not my case. Yeah, for us, it was very organic. It was like, you know, like, first the animals, then it was like, okay, what we are going to do? We are going to need the money, you know, something. So my friends here around and the hotels, they start calling me and say, Inkar, can I come with a couple of tourists to visit your home? And I say, well, maybe, okay. And step by step, finally, we say, okay, maybe I think we need to organize better the people that is coming to visit. I try to, you know, to call the government and say, look, I'm taking care of wildlife. Are you going to help me? No. I mean, no. I mean, you have to deal with your house full of animals. And yeah, it was difficult in the beginning, you know, because you are gringo, you are a woman, you are a bit like, yeah, always a bit different and doing crazy things, you know, that telling people that they have to love snakes and monkeys. It was a bit complicated, but I have an amazing neighbors that will learn each other, you know. I learn a lot from them, and it will be not possible to create this rescue center without my community and my neighbors. But I think they learn a lot from us as well, you know. It was very nice, very excited. Yeah.
Wow, that's a good early history there. I mean, coming from that background and where you are now, I think it's a good way to move into what's next for Jaguar Rescue Center. I see in our notes here we have three goals, which the first one is rescue. Can you kind of touch on the rescue portion? I guess we're diving more into the operations of Jaguar Rescue Center now.
Yeah, we are very active doing rescues. We more or less, we rescue around minimum 3-4 animals every day, almost every day. So, and the rescues could be, well, you never know. So actually yesterday night, I have a very good friend from New York here visiting me, Vanessa. She's amazing. And she say, okay, let's go have a dinner, you know. And we were very pretty, you know, with the hills, going for have a drink and a nice dinner outside in town, you know. And mm-hmm. I had a call, like a monkey with the legs paralyzed, you know, not very far away from here, kind of close, a big monkey, a howler monkey. And I start calling my team, Luis. But and the other one, Luis was in the gym. The other one, it didn't answer the phone. And finally, I say, you know what? Let's go ask to rescue that monkey. And I went, and when I was there, the monkey was literally in the forest. So I didn't know if take my shoes off or just put my shoes in the water and with the spines and I had a shorts and a heels and well, I think, Enkar, you have to do that because the monkey needs help. And the monkey was almost able to start climbing the trees. Even if the legs are paralyzed, they are very powerful. And the problem is that she would have climbed the tree, then it would be impossible to rescue and she probably will die later, you know, with an infection and everything. So I say, okay, doesn't care. Well, and yeah, I was able to fight with a monkey. That is not easy, you know, because she was a bit not happy when I pull it from the tail and I tried to put it inside a carry box. She was fighting a lot, me with the heels and my friend that just landing from New York, it was like in shock, like, okay. I think I have a very weird friend but yeah, I was able to put this poor monkey inside a carry box. I called the vets. The vets came here. They treat her, did an x-ray and everything. She actually is not very good. And I just cleaned my shoes and I went for that dinner. So yeah, you never know here. You never know. I mean, we have to rescue Luis, that he's from Venezuela. He's very important guy in this team, like Elena, that she's the biologist and she's the director. Both are doing rescue as well. And Matt, we have three people doing rescues. I mean, we actually, all the team are a bit involved on rescues. And yeah, sometimes it's a big poisonous snake or a huge crocodile. One time, you know, it was an amazing rescue. Sometimes it's just people calling you like, I have a poisonous snake, huge snake at home. And when we go there, it's just a tiny worm, you know, or something. I mean, it's just a worm. I don't know. It was like crazy.
Oh my goodness. That's honestly one. That is such a great story. I guess, you know, you never know what the rescue life is going to bring. Well, with you guys rescuing you know, three, you know, plus animals a day. Let's talk about the statistics of JRC and how many animals you guys rescued last year and the pace you guys are on for this year.
Yeah. Last year, we rescued 966 animals in 1 year. And unfortunately, the numbers are increasing. Since yesterday, including the monkey, I think, in our statistics, we have now almost 600 animals. I checked this morning and it was like 596 or 90 something. So that means that this year is going to be worse. Probably we're going to end up the year with 1,000, I don't know, 100, 200. Let's see what is going to happen, you know. But yeah, it's a lot. And it's why the center needs to keep growing, because my fear or my worst nightmares are always thinking that if I have to say no when the animal is in front of the door of my house or someone calling me and I have to say no because I don't have enough space, I don't have, you know, food, or I can pay for treat the animals or I don't know. It's never happened for in 15 years, so I never say no to an animal that it needs help. I never left an animal behind, never, and I don't want to do it. So I don't know. People sometimes is asking me, but how many animals are you gonna have in the center, you know? Till you know, 2,000 one day or one, I don't know. Honestly, I don't want to think about it. The only thing that I know is I'm not gonna leave animals dying, you know, if I can help them. So.
Well, I'm sure this summer is probably going to be a lot more. That number is probably going to be higher. Are you experiencing much higher temperatures than last year? Because I know we are here in Florida, it's insanely hot. So I'm sure that definitely adds to the rescues that you guys are getting called for.
Yeah, you're right, Koji. So we are facing one of the worst summers here. You know that we are in the rainforest. Rainforest, it means raining every day. Here is it was used to rain every morning and every afternoon. During the day, it's nice and sunny and hot, but in the mornings and in the afternoon, it used to be like colder and rainy, very rainy. Now, this summer, for the first time since I'm being here for 22 years, we didn't have rain for maybe 2 months. I was like super concerned thinking about trees, how they could, you know, survive with no rain and the animals. And I had to buy water. For the first time in my life, I had to buy big trucks with water for the animals because we didn't have water. The rivers were completely dry. We tried to do,
well infiltration systems?
Yeah, because we have the system to recollect the rain, you know, but if it's not rain, you don't have so much water. And then... The aqueducto that you open and you have aqueduct, they say we don't have water and they cut the water.
Wow.
Even if you pay the water, when it was no water for the people, it was no water for the houses, it was no water for no one.
Wow. So is that still an ongoing issue?
Now it started raining just like last couple of weeks. We are much better. We are much better. We had to buy big tanks trying to recollect as much water from rain and from aqueduct and everything. So, but we had to deal with that this year worse than any other year. Last year it was a bit, yeah, tricky, but no like this year. Yes. So we rescue animals. We are rescuing animals like completely dehydrated. I was concerned thinking like, how a toucan is gonna drink water if it's not, you know, the typical tall, how you say, like a little water in the trunks, you know, in the trees. Or here we have a lot of humidity, so the leaves in the morning are like kind of watering, moist. Yes, thank you. So the animals that eat leaves can deal with that, but even that, they were very thirsty and dehydrated. Yeah.
Man, that's tough. I on top of, you know, just day in and day out doing what you do, running into an issue with, you know, having water. I've never heard of that happen with, you know, any conservation effort we've talked to. You know, like you would just assume that water is readily available. But when you're going down to the ground table and the aqueduct and it's not there, that's a really big speed bump for you guys. So, you know, kudos for being able to think fast and order water and get tanks delivered. And, you know, hopefully that alleviates with these storms rolling in every afternoon. I know that can be tough and probably really, really difficult to see these animals coming in dehydrated of all things. Which is, I think it's a good point moving into the hospital portion of Jaguar Rescue Center. Can you kind of talk a little bit on what happens after the rescue? Do you bring these animals into the hospital and then start on the rehabilitation?
All the animals that we rescue, the first step is getting inside a hospital. You know, the doctors are doing a checkup of the animals. Even if it's an animal that fall from a tree, wherever, we took it inside a hospital, we do a checkup. If everything is okay, we return him back, you know, at the same place or wherever. But all the animals, if they are electrocuted or hit by cars or other stuff, they have to be in quarantine and they are under treatment, you know, and they have all the tests, like the blood test and ultrasound. We have the feces test and the X-ray machine. Well, we have a nice hospital, actually. I'm very proud of my hospital. Yes, it was complicated, you know. Just a month ago, we had a donation of a new anesthesia machine. It was very, very nice because we had one, but it was a bit old. So we have now a new one, and we are able to anesthetize even a hummingbird, even a colibri, or a little bat, or any animal. You know, you put the gas on, he's falling asleep, and you can do an X-ray, everything. I have to say that I have an amazing, amazing doctor. Bruges, such that he was actually kind of famous doctor in Europe, you know. Well, famous, I mean, like in the world of wildlife, I knew that he was amazing, performing surgeries and putting pins inside of hogs and animals, amazing. So I finally convinced him to come work with me. And he's amazing. He's doing some surgeries that I don't know, you know, like first level. So yeah, I'm very, very happy. The hospital is another, yeah, the hospital is another world. You get inside a hospital in the morning, you know, I open the door and say hi, and they are like working with a slot there with a burn, you know, someone is, he's performing surgery and then you cannot get in. He's like all dressed up with all the tools and the stuff, or it's very busy always, very, very busy, and they work a lot of hours, so it's, yeah, amazing.
Before we get too far into this week's episode, I wanted to give a quick shout out to our sponsor. Our sponsor this week is you, our listeners. How? Well, now that we're a nonprofit, the donations that we receive go directly towards funding our shows. Want to help or need more information? Visit wildscapeproduction.com/donate to support the show. We're so thankful for the support. You make the show exactly what it is.
You've assembled quite the team, from, you know, the people that go out and rescue, the rehabilitation team, the doctors. That's just amazing, from start to finish. So what kind of impact does this rehab have? And why is that so important when it comes to the three goals of JRC?
I think the rehab is so important because it's the only way that allow the animals to come back where they belong, you know. That is our main goal. So I knew and I learned from Barcelona that I didn't want a zoo in my home. I actually, I didn't want it. I wanted to release as much animals as possible, and this is still my goal. Sometimes it's complicated, you know, all the animals get inside a hospital, and you have to decide with your team and your experience if the animals needs to put it down, you know, sometimes that is the best for them, or they will have to spend the rest of their life in our sanctuary, like our ambassadors, because they cannot make it. You know, they lost our arm, or even we will lose as lost without our arm or legs or whatever. No, but sometimes, you know, they cannot make it. Or because they were pets for 27 years, like Paco, like our spider monkey, or because wherever, you know. But have these decisions is one of the most difficult things in my life. Have to have a voice for the animals is always complicated, you know. But I is why I always keep in my mind, anchor, the first goal is release. So sometimes my team is like, no, he's not going to make it. He's a baby, or you know, we'll raise here, he's a baby, and he's ready. And I say, let's try. I mean, I prefer to have an animal, I don't know, a month in freedom than 20 years in a golden cage, thinking that maybe it could make it. You know, it's no sense. So, yeah, we always try to do as much as possible to push this animal, you know, outside in the jungle and rewild them, for me, is the most important, yes.
That's incredible. That's a goal that I don't think is very common. You know, you're thinking with the release in mind and allowing these animals that you rescued to be sent back into their natural habitat and hopefully, you know, grow to be old and, you know, produce offspring and give back to their wildscape that they live in. So that's extremely impactful. And I can see that it costs a lot probably to house a lot of these animals. And the more that you have, the more it costs you. And I think that, you know, having them go through, and it's going to cost more people too. You need a bigger team to take care of you. Like you said, you don't want to have a zoo. You don't want to have a zoo, and you don't want to have 100,000 animals under your wing when you can, you know, let them back into the wild. So I love that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I know you just, you had worked on purchasing some land for your release center. So let's talk about that, because I know you're really excited about that.
Oh, yes. I love our land that is called La Ceiba. La Ceiba is the name of a tree. Primary forest. Primary forest, it means that it's a forest that it never was, has been touched for humans. When Cristobal Colombo discovered America, this land, it was already there. Even if now some scientists think that primary forest doesn't exist, like, well, they are not very sure. But well, primary forest, it means that the trees can be like, you know, 500 years old, 600 years old. I mean, they are super old trees. And it's an amazing place, you know. It's full of life. Here in the Caribbean, south of Costa Rica, we have 6% of world's biodiversity. So when you walk inside this Ceiba primary forest, our land, oh, my God, it's like to become like in the beginning of everything. It's like be in the uterus of the Mother Earth, you know. It's like the origin of everything, the origin, the authentic that is life, is the connection of pure life, you know. Like, we sometimes forget that we really belong to nature. We are nature, but we completely forget that. So for me, walk in that primary forest and be surrounding of these amazing trees that you feel that you are nothing, you know. You feel that they were there before you born, and they are going to be there when you die. So have these, you know, these thoughts is like something that we have to think about it, really, and respect. A lot of respect, but this land that is a home for thousands of animals, thousands of creatures, amphibians, reptiles, big cats. We put the camera traps around and we saw like the puma, ocelots, everything is there, you know. It's amazing. It is why I want to protect it, because then it belongs to the Corredor Mesoamericano, that it goes through Panama, and the jaguars and the big cats, and they use this path, this corredor, and it's so important. Unfortunately, the human impact is coming even in this area, is why it's super important, buy this land, because it's going to be the only way to protect it completely, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, props to you for stepping up and buying that land and allowing there to be that, you know, piece of untouched nature where you can go and be grounded and be, you know, respectful. And I think most importantly, you know, embrace the nature that's there. There aren't many places like that in the world today. I think the oceans are some place where you can just go and embrace and have that feeling of, you know, kind of how small you are in the big scheme of things. And the release land that you guys have sounds, you know, just like that. It's amazing and it's inspiring. And, you know, I'm really glad there are people out there like you that are able to put funding towards that and, you know, build a program that focuses on rescuing, rehabilitating, and releasing into these natural habitats, because there's not a lot out there. You know, a lot of rescue centers do almost inadvertently become zoos. You know, it's not their intention, I don't think, but they do become that. And for you to have such an emphasis on releasing and keeping, you know, kind of that primary forest, that's absolutely amazing and incredibly inspiring. One of the things that I think is also important to discuss when it comes to releasing into, you know, the natural habitats is what happens when animals come through the rescue center and, you know, adapt to human interaction and, you know, some of the almost pleasantries that they have, you know, with a program that's as amazing as yours. You have to teach them how to be wild again, right?
Right, Ethan, right. See, and this is a big challenge. And then because, you know, when I start having the rescue center as a biologist and a young biologist and coming from Europe, from zoos, that I had in my mind that it's impossible, you know, everybody was saying me, it's impossible to release monkeys when you raise them as babies. You can't do that because they are very used to humans. I mean, when I'm here, when my brain hears the word impossible, I get very stubborn. And I was like, no way. No, I mean, it has to be the way. So I was very scared, but I learned, you know, watching, just observing nature. I was here for years by myself with these monkeys, walking in the jungle, you know, that I just opened the door of my home and I have the jungle here. So I start seeing the interactions between the wild ones and my baby monkeys, you know. And I was thinking like, okay, I'm the surrogate mother. I become the new mother of these babies that are orphan babies, you know. But if we got all the precautions, of course, because we are humans, they are monkeys, and even if we are primates, we can share, diseases and stuff. But if we take all the precautions and everything, why not release or let them to express themselves what they want to do? That is actually what I'm doing here. We release every day all the 20 howler monkeys in the forest completely free. And they come back in the afternoon. And we have two persons taking notes and watching them, because the baby ones, they still need help, you know. But the teenagers are completely free up in the trees, in the canopy, enjoying, having, you know, sex with the wild ones. They fall in love and yeah, I mean, it's like, of course, if you have your teenagers and your babies at home, they will never get released, you know. Here our monkeys have like a step by step, and when we are sure and the vets are sure that they are completely healthy, we let them go outside. And it's like nature, because in nature it works the same. They are in a family group with the mother, attached with the mother for a long time, for 2 years. And then step by step, they fall in love with the males, with the females. They go outside, they go to hang out, they come back home. And like this since the day that they prefer to be, you know, to spend the night with the handsome Caribbean monkey and not at home. And and here is the same. I mean, we'll let them go. We'll let them to express. And it works. It works amazing. We have 99% of success releasing, especially howler monkeys. With the spider monkeys and capuchin monkeys, it's a bit different because they are very smart and you have to, sometimes you are right, they end up inside houses. But why? Because now our forest is full of humans. Before, no. Before here, we were just few people living here. Now, after 20 years, the human impact and a lot of people that wants to really come to live here, and it's being a huge problem for me, for our rescue center, because you don't know where you can release the animals. I have to go every time more far away, especially if you want to release big cats or spider or capuchin monkeys. For sloths, for example, other animals, yes, we'll let them go step by step, as the same as monkeys. We'll let them get out from the enclosure. They get in when they want using ropes. I always say that they connect the past and the future inside the enclosure and outside the enclosure. We attach ropes to the trees, and by themselves, they start, you know, to go inside and outside. And it works like in the natural way.
Well, that's, I mean, I'm trying to wrap my head around, you know, what you just said about animals leaving that you send off and then they come back later. They know, they're conscious, you know, they're very aware that you help animals and they have that trust in you. I think, you know, humans are animals as well. So for us to be able to give that energy off and say, hey, we're not here to hurt you, we're here to just help you and not keep you contained in a cage. And they come back and they're like, oh, there's other animals here that are probably going to be released. And what you said about animals that that you release back into the wild and they go reproduce, that was like, that is the goal, right? That they're healthy enough to go and carry on and be productive in the ecosystem and in the food chain. So I think that's absolutely, you know, just, that's huge. I want to move into the construction portion and what it's like in your area with all this new construction going on. And this is everywhere. This is all over the world. But specifically in Costa Rica, what issues are you facing with the impact of construction, especially when it comes to the release and rehabilitation of these animals you're rescuing?
Well, it's you know, we always humans are gonna make an impact, and you have to think really good. I mean, the problem is the construction. The problem is like there are more roofs around. When the animals fall from the trees, that is nature. Before they used to fall in a jungle and nothing happened to them. Now they fall on roofs. Do you know that one of the causes that we have in our stats is falling on a roof? For iguanas, monkeys, when they fall on a roof, they get hurt. You know, when they fall in the jungle, no, it looks like a silly thing, but more houses is a huge impact directly to the life of the animals that is normal. The branches can get broken, they fall, but they just go up to the tree and nothing happened. Now they have houses, or they fall and there are dogs. There are dogs, there are cats that they kill them. You know, another important reason, main reason is dog attacks or cats attacks. Yesterday we received a paca. I don't know if you know what is a paca. It's a big rodent. It looks like a, well, it doesn't look like a capybara, but just, you know, to understand, it's like a big rodent that yesterday night the doctors were doing a surgery because all the neck is completely open in a mouth of a big dogs, you know. So people is not just being here the houses and the constructions itself, if not dogs, chickens that attract big cats, because we never had before this conflict between chickens, humans, and big cats like now. Because of course a big cat is not stupid. If he can go to the supermarket, you will go to the supermarket. You are not going to spend hours hunting in the jungle with a wild animal that is prepared and ready for evolution to be chased and run away, you know. The chickens are silly, well, for chickens, but I mean, you know what I mean.
They're chicken nuggets for the big cats.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. They are there in the enclosure, pull your things, that even they cannot move. The cats are very smart. They always find a hole to get in and eat the free chicken in a supermarket, you know. And then what else? The human impact is just, we are very loud. We are super loud. I mean, I think we are one of the loudest beings on Earth, because we have the music on, or we are talking very loud and everything. So that stress a lot the sloths or the animals. You know, the sloths during the evolution, they learn to be in silence, and the camouflage is what gave them a big success during all these thousands and thousands of years. And then another problem is the lights. The turtles, for example, when they born, the little turtles, when they hatch, they follow the moon and they go to the ocean. Now they go to the road because they confuse our lights with the moon. And this is a big problem that we are working to change the lamps that we have on the streets with electrical company. Actually, we did it like in front of the beach because we are having this problem with the little turtles. Then what else? The electricity. We put electricity because, of course, we need the power. And the electricity is, in Costa Rica, is not the law that say that it has to be insulating. So the animals get born because they confuse our power lines and wires with the branches. So imagine how many impacts you produce coming and setting up a little house in a property in Costa Rica or here in the Caribbean South in the middle of the jungle.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention the food.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Not to mention our trash, what these animals can get into and what can poison them.
See, well, it's a lot more, you know, the cars and a lot of stuff. Yeah.
So let's talk about that electrical standard real quick and how that's been a big topic of discussion for you with a lot of the power lines. So I know we had talked about before, you know, in the wild, you know, especially the howler monkeys, you know, they're going around, they're up in the trees, you know, acting as if they're wild. I'm sure there are quite a few times where a monkey would mistake a power line for a vine or a branch. And with it not being insulated, I'm sure there's some pretty devastating effects. So what have you guys really done to kind of bring that topic to the forefront and to the Costa Rican government?
Well, actually in Costa Rica, there are like more than 3,000 animals a year being electrocuted in a power lines, 3,000. So last year here at the center, we had like around 87 animals. It's like around two animals, almost an animal a week, or probably an animal a week, electrocuted in a power line. So years ago, around 12 years ago, we decided to try to do something, you know. I'm not just happy taking care of the monkeys and releasing the monkeys and I'm so happy. I release a little monkey or a little sloth and I release. Yeah, but if we are not dealing with the problems that they have to face, nothing is going to change. So we decided to start meetings with the electrical company, with the government as well. And well, it's a long story because it was not easy, you know. But finally, when you have the power to have all the tourists that are coming here, Jawa Rescue Center is getting so big, and you have the news that give you, well, they are there that when you need it in that case. So wherever, yeah. So because always is a huge impact, you know, see a photo of a mother howler monkey pregnant, completely.
Because she was with that handsome destroy. Caribbean monkey.
Yeah, probably. So finally, we were able to sit down on the table with the government and the electrical company, and we signed a partnership. We are the only ones in the country that we have a partnership signed with these two institutions. And through donations, we are able to buy the devices and ropes to make bridges in a canopy for monkeys and as well as wildlife. And we buy the devices for the wires and the transformers, you know, to avoid the electrocution. So we put all these devices that they're plastic tools and special things in the hands of the electrical company, and they are changing the old ones for the new ones, completely safe and isolated from the power, it means. But it's a big job because, as I say, the new constructions, you know, not always are doing this job. If not, they are completely naked, the wires. So it's a huge job that we are doing since the last 12 years. Yeah.
Wow. So that's been like an ongoing battle. I'm sure that's been super difficult and probably one of your hardest battles, because that's a big number. You know, 3,000 animals, did you say yearly?
Yeah, it's like almost 1,000, from the electrocutions?
Mm-hmm.
3,000 animals every year in Costa Rica.
Wow, I can't imagine what that number is here in America, you know, with so much infrastructure here. I don't even want to know. That's amazing. You're really paving that lane for, you know, setting that precedent for hopefully other conservation efforts to kind of follow suit and look at every single aspect of human impact. Because it's not just one aspect that you're focused on battling. You're literally in the ring with all of these outcomes and these possibilities of how animals get hurt. Because you see how on these rescue calls, you see how these animals are being hurt and what the cause is. So I love that you're going and taking your organization and fighting every single cause, because at the end of the day, it's not just one thing.
Yeah, it's exactly, Koji. For me, one of the worst things that I have to see is like when the animals come electrocuted in a power line, especially when the babies get attached to the dead body of the mother on the fur, and you have to separate them. Even after all this year, we all cry every time because it's the worst. You know that the life of this little baby sloth or monkey is gonna change, and you are gonna have it here for a long time, for 3 years more or less, and it's so horrible. I mean, or when you have to remove arm or legs, that they are suffering a lot. I mean, it's very unfair. It's very unfair that. Because we want the power, you know, and we need the power, they have to suffer these consequences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's incredibly heavy. And, you know, it shows that what you're doing is that much more important. Discussing these standards, having those partnerships with the government entities, and, you know, bringing out, you know, advocacy materials and educating people. Just really shows how important the organization is. And while that is incredibly heavy, I do think it's time to have some more fun, and we're gonna start our Wild Stories segment. So basically, this is the part of the show where you can have a little fun and tell some really wild stories that you don't normally get to tell. So, and Connor, what do you have for us?
Oh my god!
This is fun. This is the no filter. Enjoy yourself. Go for it. Moment.
Oh my God, the government is going to kill me if I tell you all these stories. No, you know, here we always have fun stories. For me, my daily life is already very fun. For example, now that I have 6 baby howler monkeys at home, and well, you know, I'm like on my computer with a monkey on my hair. Oh, I have to go pee with the monkeys a lot of times because, you know, what can I do? I mean, the people say, how you are going to the bathroom, Anchor? And I'm sometimes feel embarrassed, you know, to say the truth that I have to go pee with 3 monkeys here, you know, and yeah. And I mean, and it's complicated to have a normal life when your home is full of animals, and then you never know what is going to happen. I have this howler monkey that I raised, Konga, is one of the nicer stories. Konga is now 15 years old, and she's wild already. She doesn't allow me to touch or to, not very much, you know, and I, of course, we are going to respect that. I love when they really becomes very wild is what I want, you know. But every time that she get pregnant, I don't know why she get pregnant or she has a baby, she's coming home. She's coming back here because she's living here around with a Caribbean monkey, very handsome, I have to say, with a huge, huge white balls. You maybe are jealous, guys, but you have to know that the howler monkeys, they are... I always say the human balls are very, very, well, very, not very funny. You know that the monkeys, the Pathos monkey, they have an amazing blue balls. When I was working, they are amazing. And the howler monkeys.
I don't think blue balls are amazing, but that's just me.
And howler monkeys, they have white balls. They are completely black. They are spectacular. So, I have a friend that say, when I had my first howler monkey male, I had my best friend, Dawn, from States as well, say, Inka, did you think that you always have the monkeys in your hair, no? What is going to happen with that monkey? He's becoming a teenager. Are you going to have the white balls here in your face? And I was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
This is nature. So, well, yeah, I think a few times I had white balls in my face. No, the story of Konga is very nice because she's you know, coming with these little babies when she's getting pregnant to show me, you know, that he's becoming a mother, and I'm a grandmother of 7 babies already. Sorry, but the howler monkeys are very loud. I don't know if you are here. Can you hear them? Maybe not.
Yeah,
but it's not hard for me to listen to you because they are like getting very loud.
They hear you talking about balls and they're like, don't tell that story. That's personal, Mom. Gosh.
That's personal, yes. So Konga is one of the nicer stories here. And I'm very proud of that story. Be able to keep watching her as a mother of all these animals, as a woman, as me, you know, like this, she's, you know, able to survive all these years dealing with the first husband. Then I have to say that Konga changed the first husband for a younger one.
Oh, she traded in for a newer model.
Yes.
Good for her. Good
yeah,
for her.
Of
I feel bad for the first husband, but good for her.
Yeah. So she's very smart. And yeah.
She's evolving.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's like a modern woman, and now the 50 years old woman's, I mean, they go with younger males, you know? So Konga,
yeah,
is,
that's the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So Konga is very smart and changed husband. And the last two sons are from the last husband, very young, I have to say. And she's very happy about it. She's, yeah. And then we have another monkey that is Pepeta. Pepeta, it means a little potato in Italian. You know that my husband was from Italy, so I'm used to talk in Italian with the animals because I cannot practice a lot with the people, so I practice with the animals. So Pepeta, it came 15 years ago as well, but she's the only monkey that decided to stay with us. So she's going outside with all the troop of monkeys. These 20 monkeys, they go outside. She's hanging out. She's teaching all the babies. I think she has the role to, you know, to be like the leader and the grandmother. Well, actually, we call the sexy grandmother, because even if she's 15, she's having a lot of sex with all the new boys, all the new, you know. She's
go
she's,
get it, Pepeta.
Yeah, because she has to teach all the new ones. So she has a, you know, she's playing the role to be a sexy grandmother, teaching them not just how to eat, how to climb, how to survive in the forest, and how to rewild them. That actually her role is so important for us. But of course, she's teaching them how to be sexy and how to take the tongue out, that the females, they do like this to say to the males, come here, I want sex. They are very clear. They are super clear when they want what they want, you know? So Pepeta is teaching the new generations, you know, as well, how to be sexy, how to, you know, deal with life. Yeah.
we need the video footage of their mating call, of her mating call.
Oh yes.
With the tongue, yeah. With the tongue out. So if you have that, please send it over.
Very nice.
I had no expectations of what stories you would share, but you know, knowing that you rescue and rehabilitate primarily monkeys, it seems like most of the stories would be related to sexual encounters between these monkeys, especially with the generational gap. So I'm not surprised.
These monkeys have the life. They get the beach. They have a nice house. They're having sex whenever they want. This place sounds amazing.
Yes. Oh, yes. It's definitely.
It's called Pura Vida. Pura Vida lifestyle.
Yeah, Pura Vida lifestyle, boys. Yeah, we are here in the happiest country in the world. You know, they say Costa Rica is one of the happiest country in the world. And monkeys, of course, are not less. I mean,
our monkeys are
the happiest monkeys in the world. Yeah, one of the happiest monkeys in the world. We at least are trying, and we want the best for them.
Well, that's amazing. And it seems like you definitely are giving them the best, and they seem to be having a damn good time.
Yes.
You did bring up a particular monkey, Paco. And let's talk about Paco and how much he means to you, and why he's so important in kind of the JRC story.
Paco is so important for me, super important. I could never forget the day that the police brought me Paco here. When they call me and they say, you know, can you join us because we have to confiscate an animal. So when I went there and I saw Paco, I couldn't believe it. It was on a chain, in a short, like maybe 2 meters, attached with a pole in a garage. For 27 years. I mean, what? And the people were, you know, this woman was crying, saying, oh, my baby. Oh, no me lleven a mi bebé. I want my baby. And I was like, no, this is not love, you know, of course not. I mean, it was so sad. And they put it inside a carry box. He was very scared. He arrived here at home in our hospital. We put in the quarantine. And I say to my team, okay, I'm going to get in. I'm going to see how this monkey is. And I don't know. We have this connection that sometimes you have connection, sometimes no. They need time or whatever. But I remember to cutting the leash around the neck, you know. He allowed me to touch it, to cut it. I was talking like, Paco, here a new life is starting. He was very scared. But it was amazing. And now Paco is our viejito, you know, we call our viejito, our old person here at the sanctuary. But when he came here, he was used to have rice and beans and Coca-Cola. So the first days I had to go buy it because he was not able to eat anything else. And he refused to have any other food. So it's amazing how, you know, yeah, he's drinking from the bottles. He's standing up in two legs more than other normal monkey. He's more human than a monkey. He never saw other monkeys before. He was not able to socialize. So now he's with Nerea and Sansa. They are like a family. And when I have time and all the other members of my team, we are used to go with him into the forest in the afternoons when the center is closed a bit, and he enjoyed the walks like all men. But we never saw Paco up in a tree, that it will be my dream. But maybe it's not going to happen. I know he never went up in a tree, and maybe it's never going to happen. But at least he's going outside, enjoying the sun, the grass. He's laying on the grass. He's smelling the trees, and he's every time like watching around, always holding my hand because he's a bit scared. But it's beautiful to have the honor to give a second opportunity and this amazing life to Paco now.
27 years in a garage. I couldn't imagine.
The connection that you've been able to make with some of these animals is just unbelievable and so cool. And seeing how your journey's been tied together from your time in Barcelona at the zoo working primarily with primates to, you know, the connection you have with Paco now is just awesome.
Yes, for me it's very important because the connections that you have in a zoo can be very strong as well. You know that when I'm coming back to Barcelona once a year to see my father and my family, in the beginning I didn't want to visit the zoo. I didn't do it for 5 years. But then I have a good friends there, and I still have my other family, the gorillas and chimpanzees and apes. So I had the necessity to go and see them. And I'm used to go now every year when I'm going one day to visit them. And it's amazing how they recognize me. It's so amazing. So, wow. The how they get very excited, like, you know, how the chimpanzees do this sound and they want to hug me and or they want to touch me or we both like kind of, wow, what are you doing here? It's like when a friend that you are not seeing for a long time and you hear the voice and like, oh, hi. And they get very exciting, you know, it's, wow, it's amazing.
Well, I can tell that you're just extremely passionate about that connection alone, you know, regardless of the rescue, everything you got going on. It's the connection that you have. I think it's about love and spirituality that keeps you connected to these animals, because it's more than just putting a Band-Aid on them and then pushing them back out into the wild. You're developing a relationship that that they definitely need.
Yeah, absolutely. You need to feel their pain. You need to suffer with them. You need to, you know, have the spirituality that you are talking, that you need to understand. You need to imagine, you know, sometimes I walk in the forest and I imagine how amazing it has to be, you know, be a monkey, be up in a canopy. We are just humans, you know, we can walk, but I mean, we are far away from jump and have this amazing tail and be in the canopy and see the world from there, you know. We think that we are the masters of the universe, but we are not. I mean, and empathize with their feelings, with their suffering, with their families and their connections, and it's so important. And I think nothing is going to change if humans, we don't understand that animals have feelings and spirituality and connections. Their families are as strong as our families, and nothing is going to change. You know, we are going to keep eating animals. We are going to still hurting them, poaching them, and yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hopefully we see some change here. It's organizations like yours that are definitely paving a new lane, like I said earlier. So we're on the right track. We're on the right track. Let's just hope that the temperature doesn't get too high.
Yes.
But that's a great segue. Thanks for sharing, you know, a little bit about Paco. I wasn't aware of Paco, you know, before this call, but maybe one day we'll be able to meet him and I'll have a little hangout with Paco and maybe share some Coke and rice and beans with him.
No more Coke and rice and beans for Paco. Now he's having a healthy diet. Now he's having a coach, you know. He has a coach, a nutritionist, and going to the gym.
Good for him. We could all learn from Paco now.
Yes.
Well, that's a great way to kind of move into our next section here as we wrap up the show. I know we're just a little over an hour. Let's shift gears and let's talk to the audience. Ankar, let's share some advice that you may have to anyone that's interested in rescue and rehabilitation and anything in that regard. Can you speak on some advice, maybe from your younger years or from a recent experience? Can you talk about something that you would tell a young viewer out there?
I will say do it, because you are going to have an amazing life. I think I have the best job on earth. I love my job. I will never regret about my steps. If you ask me if I'll have anything different in my life, no, absolutely not. And, you know, have the opportunity and the honor to work with animals is something very special. For me, it's super special. I had this dream since I born. I didn't want to do other thing in my life. I cannot imagine my life without a monkey in my shoulder or without being surrounding of animals. But you have to know that it's complicated. It's not a dream, you know. It's not posting selfies with the animals. It's not like, this is so cute. No, it's you have to be like 24 hours, no life almost, you know. If you are able to do this sacrifice, put the animals before yourself in the way that, well, nothing is never more important than yourself, because if not, you are not able to deal with all that. But you know what I mean? I mean, it's like, is a life with sacrifice, but is a life that is very worth it. And nature needs people that work, you know, very hard, and animals needs you if you are thinking about having a rescue center or work with animals. Yes, definitely do it.
Well, that's amazing advice, and we love it.
Well said. Well, thank you for sharing that. I'm sure there's definitely someone out there listening that is going to do it, and they'll credit you in the future for their success. And hopefully maybe they join your team one day.
That would be great.
Yeah. She's like, I need all the help. How does someone get involved with Jaguar Rescue Center? I know there's a ton of resources on your website, on your social media, yeah, on how to get involved, but let's hear it from you on how someone can help.
Well, for us it's so important, you know, different things. Of course, donations, we rely on donations. Without donors, we could not help animals. This is so important. Then, of course, it's important to participate more active, being more active. If you want to come to Costa Rica as you guys and do a tour with us, if you want to come as a volunteer, and of course, if you want to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and our social media, it's so important to spread the word what is happening in Costa Rica, what is happening in this corner of Costa Rica. You have to know that maybe we forget to tell the audience that we are working and we are very involved in our community as well, because in Costa Rica, in the south of Costa Rica, in here in Puerto Viejo, we have indigenous community, Afro-Caribbean community, Chinese community, European. We're all mixed. And it's so important to work together. So conservation without community today is not possible, because we are together. We are connected. And it's very complicated, you know, to make a house and to build a house, or just if you are living in a city, and even in a city we have nature. So nature and humans, we are together and we have to work in community. So you can help us, you know, like in our community programs, bring in indigenous people and kids that they don't have home, and all these little kids that they need to learn empathy. Because it's so important that you know your childhood and you are raised in a community or in a family that really love animals. If not, you are not gonna love animals if you don't learn that, you know. So I wanted to say that because it's so important for me, my community and our community projects, that I'm so proud about it. Yeah, the job that we are doing. And a lot of kids and a lot of women that are taking care of the kids, indigenous especially, and they are coming to my center to learn about nature and how to deal with poisonous snakes or how to help. Yeah,
it's amazing. Community is key in order for us to move forward. It's 100% the key that kind of unlocks that door for us to move forward into kind of a better society and, you know, become better conservationists. All of us have that ability. And, you know, we're glad that, you know, community is such an important thing to you guys. We support that and love that. And, you know, so glad that you guys are pushing that needle forward.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And you better reserve some space for us, because we're going to come down there and hang out with you and all the animals. And we'll get to see your organization for what it really is, and hopefully be able to share that with our audience too.
Yes, please. And you are gonna clean a lot of monkey poop.
Okay. All right.
Deal. As long as I don't have any balls on my forehead.
No. This is not allowed. I'm so sorry. No.
Well, thank you again, Inkar, for joining us today. This was so fun. I don't think I've laughed this hard on an episode before. So that's great. And thank you again for your time.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to meet you, Koji Ethan, and I'll be waiting for you here in Costa Rica. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Wild and Unprotected Podcast, brought to you by Wildscape Productions. Follow us on social media at Wildscape Productions. For more information on our documentary series, Shoreline Stories, visit wildscapeproduction.com. Stay tuned for our future episodes, as we have so much more in store for Wild and Unprotected.